As America watched the election results trickle in over the past few days, one thing is abundantly clear. There are deep divides within our nation. After a year of nationwide protests over systemic racism and police brutality, many people see the problem of racism differently. So far, an estimated 69 million people voted for President Trump, despite his failure to condemn white supremacy. And the majority of those voters are white Americans. Let's take a deeper look at the role of racism in this election with Robin DiAngelo, author of White Fragility, Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism. Robin, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you, Tanya.
The view from many, especially people of color, is that for about half of the electorate, Trump's racist rhetoric and support for white supremacy wasn't a deal breaker. What does this say for you?
That the foundation of this country is racism and white supremacy, that many, many white people are deeply invested in it. And so it is not a deal breaker. I think the post-racial discourse we had during the Obama years is over, and it's been laid bare, and we have some reckoning.
Let's go deeper into what you're saying, that people are deeply invested in racism. When we talked to Trump supporters during the campaign, many of them said they were supporting the president because they believed he was best positioned to rebuild the economy. But we actually heard a Trump supporter from Georgia on NPR yesterday who said, "The far left is fixated on problems that don't affect the majority of Americans." And he was alluding to the problem of racism in this country. What's the disconnect in the way people view President Trump's racist policies and rhetoric, and really the problem with systemic racism in this country?
Well, one really key issue that's revealed in this person's statement is not understanding that systemic racism hurts white people. It compels us to vote against our own interests, to deny programs that could deeply support us, but that we see as, you know, special rights for people who don't deserve them.
But building on that, can you break down why addressing systemic racism is good for all people and not just people of color?
Because we can be manipulated against our own best interests. You know, there is a greater concentration of wealth in fewer hands than has ever been recorded in human history. And yet our attention is drawn to the most vulnerable. Of course, that helps ameliorate the sense of powerlessness we might feel. It's certainly easier to look at vulnerable people and blame them. But that sets us up to be manipulated to support programs or not support programs that could actually serve everybody.
Mm. During the campaign, polls suggested that white women voters were actually turning against Trump, but the president actually gained his support among white women to about 55%. I mean, Trump seemingly won them with his message of law and order and raising fears about violence in the streets of America's suburbs. Talk a little bit about the role of fear in stoking racial tensions.
There is a long history of white women aligning with patriarchy. I mean, we are second-class citizens in relation to patriarchy, but when we align with it, then we have some adjacency to power. At the same time, we are still above somebody else. We're still above black and brown people. There are many very consistent strategies that Trump uses, and one is to deeply divide people into two essential groups to push, you know, the villainized side of that division to the furthest extreme possible, and then amplify dynamics that stoke fear. So, you know, if we have Joe Biden, we're going to get rioting and looting, you know, 24/7 through the streets. It's hardly a dog whistle. It's so explicit.
But I want to ask you about something else, Robin. When journalists and political analysts talk about election results specifically, they tend to analyze the candidates' ground games and their ability to reach different voting demographics. But isn't this beyond politics and more about changing the way we think about race as individuals?
Each individual white person tends to think of themselves as outside of racism, right? I don't know that you could have come up with a more effective way to protect systemic racism than reduce it to the very simple formula of good people versus bad people. And that allows you to both express your racism, as Trump does so clearly, and still say, "I'm the least racist person in the room." And so even white nationalists will not acknowledge that they are racist, even as their project is in a white ethno state. And so that just is such a setup to have each individual person see themselves as not part of that problem. And what I would offer is that no one could possibly be outside of the forces of racism and systemic racism in this country. And it's on each and every one of us to change our question from if we have been impacted by those forces to how have we been impacted? When the question is if, well, for most white people, the answer is no, not at all. I've been completely untouched by any racist ideology or messaging or implicit biases. I've been untouched by the culture I live in and so forth. So then what further action is required of me? Well, none. I'm not racist. When we change that question to how have I been shaped by the society I live in, that sets us on a lifelong path, both personally as individuals, but in organizing to address institutional policies and practices. We just can't get where we need to go if we reduce our understanding of what it means to be racist to conscious intention.
I understand exactly what you're saying, but is there a future in the near future where we'll get anywhere close to that? I mean, I'm thinking about no matter who is our president moving forward, this problem is still very much alive and well. Do you think or do you expect Trump's ideology to persist? And is he more a catalyst or a symptom of a bigger problem in our country?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a symptom. It's easy to look at him and say, what a terrible person, but he couldn't do what he's done without the tacit collusion of many, many, many people. So yeah, it's disheartening. I'm sure that I am not alone in how heartbreaking this situation is and how discouraging. Yes, we have our work cut out for us. Where I find some encouragement is that both sides, if you will, have been amplified. So while white nationalism and racial animus and resentment are definitely amplified, so is anti-racist activism. And so we just have to be consistent and courageous and never be complacent.
To deepen what you're saying, we do have a habit, though, of calling on Black and brown people to offer solutions on how to end racism. And really, one thing about your work that I'm struck by is that you're basically saying white people are the ones that need to work. They need to do the work to dismantle racism. How can white people normalize calling out their own racism?
Well, I don't think we can normalize it if we don't deepen our understanding of the concept of systemic racism. And that's another thing that does give me some hope, is that that idea is now in the mainstream. As long as we see it as just individual bad actors, we likely are not going to move forward. Everybody has a role. It is critical that we listen to and take leadership from Black and brown people and other people of color. And for far too long, we've offloaded all of this onto people who don't control the institutions. It's as if in relation to patriarchy, men just turned to women and said, okay, solve patriarchy. It's like, no, how about you talk to your brothers and call this out in a way that only you can? But, you know, ultimately the responsibility goes to those who control the institutions and whose bias is backed with legal authority. Right? Again, we all play a part, but those parts are different. And it's on each of us to identify. So what is my part? I'm not a white nationalist, but that does not mean I have not colluded with systemic racism and does not mean that I don't play a role. That's each of our individual work.
That's Robin DiAngelo, author of White Fragility, Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism. Thank you so much, Robin.
Oh, you're so welcome, Tonya.